Good afternoon. Senate Judiciary Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Friday, August 27th, 2021. The time is 1:30 p.m. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Keel, Senator Hughes, Senator Myers, myself, Chair Senator Holland. Senator Schauer is available both as Teams and it looks like on the phone. Senator Reinbold is electronically in the room, also listening in. Thank you all for coming in on this Senate Judiciary meeting during the third special session. And as anybody who's watching can see, we're masked up again. Legislative Council has put the mask mandate back in place for the Capitol building, so we're masked up again. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Nancy, our recording secretary, and Kelsey, our moderator for today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. In Senate Judiciary, we will now bring Senate Bill 53 back before the committee. Senate Bill 53 is a governor's bill related to the statutory permanent fund dividend formula. This bill was previously heard by this committee during the regular session on April 21st, and we heard public testimony on April 26th. My intent today is to take amendments on this bill and then set it aside until Monday for further work. As a reminder, passing this bill would change the statutory permanent fund dividend formula to be 50% of the percent of market value, or POMV, calculation established by SB 26 in 2018. The POMV calculation is currently set in statute at 5%. So, in other words, the PFD would become 2.5% of the average market value of the permanent fund as calculated over the first five of the last 6 years. To simplify it, this calculation would yield the $2,350 PFD that is being discussed so often in the fiscal planning working group and in this third special session. As we all know, this bill is part of the governor's larger fiscal plan and was supported by the fiscal planning working group. As we also know, the legislator has not followed the existing permanent fund dividend statute for the past 6 years. Senate Bill 53 provides us with an opportunity to go back to following the law when deciding the amount of the dividend each year by aligning state statute with the proposed constitutional amendment. While I am aware that many Alaskans would prefer to maintain and follow the historical formula, the 50-50 plan is seen as a compromise that meets the original intent of the historical formula. We will talk about some amendments to this bill today and on Monday. Before we begin, are there any comments from committee members? Senator Hughes.
And just to clarify, because you mentioned we were taking amendments today, we were going to continue work on Monday, but there'll be an opportunity for further amendments on Monday, just so the public knows that there could be additional changes on Monday, correct?
Correct. We're going to set an amendment deadline for 5 p.m. on Sunday, and the timing on the Judiciary Committee's meeting will be a little different because of the special floor session at 2 o'clock on Monday. So this we're going to probably gavel in about 10:30 on Monday morning in this room. Any other comments? Seeing none, let's move on to the amendments. As we proceed, please note that the committee is authorizing legislative legal to make technical and conforming changes to meet the intent expressed during this hearing. With that, I will be moving amendment number one labeled A.13. Is there an objection?
For discussion.
Objection for discussion. Yeah. Senator Keel, thank you. Ed King, my staff, if you'd please take a seat at the presenter's table, put yourself on the record and explain what was that A.13 or amendment number one.
Is a fix-it amendment. It's necessary because the original Senate Bill 53 was being debated during the regular session in the previous fiscal year. Now that we're in a new fiscal year, some of the terms and provisions within the bill are out of date. For example, there was a delayed effective date in Senate Bill 26 from 2018, which took effect on June 30th of 2021. So when this bill was originally discussed, that provision had not taken effect yet. It has now taken effect. So the provisions, the changes on amendment number one at the top, the deletion of the phrase providing for an effective date by repealing the effective date of Section 8, Chapter 26, SLA 18, that's no longer necessary, so that's being deleted because that provision has now taken effect. The same is true with the changes on line 6 and 7, changing it from 5 1/4 to 5. That is already law now because that delayed effective date has taken effect, so that change is no longer necessary. The rest of the changes, Mr. Chairman, are consistent with that, conforming to the new fiscal year and the changes that are necessary. I'd also point to the end on lines 19 through 22, dealing with the effective dates clause. The proposed amendment deletes the effective date of July 1st, 2021. Now that July 1st, 2021 is passed, the amendment proposes to change that effective date to July 1, 2022.
Senator Hughes.
My understanding is that last lines 2022, we actually would not want to change it to 2022. We would need it to be effective now if we wanted to kick this in. Is that correct this year?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, the effective date of the bill as proposed by this amendment would not take effect until the last day of this fiscal year. First day of the next fiscal year, I'm sorry. So to the extent that the legislature wants to utilize changes in this bill to affect the fiscal year 22, the one that's currently being debated, effective date that's being proposed might be too late. And perhaps Ms. Newman can enlighten you on, or the committee on how to correct that if that's the will of the committee.
Ms. Nauman, are you listening in on the phone?
I'm here.
Please state your name, put yourself on the record, and do you have anything to offer on this particular part of amendment number one?
For the record, this is Emily Nauman with Legislative Legal Services. To the extent that the committee would wish that this bill would take effect for the current fiscal year, that line could simply be amended to say take effect immediately.
Is there a preference to have it state take effect immediately, or just strike lines 21 and 22?
Again, for the record, Emily with Legislative Legal, I believe that retaining some amendment to those lines is important. Otherwise, the bill will have an effective date that's already passed, which, unless we want to add a retroactivity provision, can't be done. But I would also comment that regardless of whatever time this bill takes effect, the legislature is free to appropriate any amount from the earnings reserve in fiscal year 2022, regardless of what the law says. That's the Wilikowski v. State decision. So regardless of when these changes of the law take effect, the legislature could appropriate in accordance with the changes at any time.
Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Emily, for that clarification. I think one of the goals here, and I believe the chair expressed them in his opening remarks, is that what we appropriate would align with the law. So if we want it to align with the law and we want to choose to follow it this year, you're suggesting leaving lines 21 and 22 the way it's written in amendment number 1, 8.13, and then to add the words, could you tell us exactly what the words we should add to make it work? So it would be effective for FY22.
I believe instead of line 22 being insert open quotation July 1, 2022 close quotations, it would probably have to say something along the lines of fill in the blank.
That's correct. It should be take effect immediately.
And that's the correct wording, three words, take effect immediately.
So
that will be sufficient for now. Yes. Yeah.
So instead of inserting July 1, 2022, we would delete July 21, 22, and in place of it put the words take effect immediately.
Mr. Chairman, the words take effect are already in the bill. Just the word immediately would be sufficient.
Thank you so much for that clarification.
And can I, Mr. Chair?
And I just want to remind everybody, we're going to authorize legislative legal to make technical and conforming changes to meet the intent expressed during this hearing. Senator Hughes.
So can I just get Emily's? So if we delete on line 21 the date, we can just insert the word immediately, and that will take care of this?
Correct. I'll just confirm with Emily. I believe that the line 21 should say, delete, open quotation, July 1, 2021, close quotes. Line 22 should simply say, insert, open quotes, immediately, close quotes. How's that sound, Ms. Nauman?
For the record, yeah, this is Emily, Legislative Legal Services. I apologize. It's very difficult to write these. Our office, it takes many hours to get these amendments produced, and it's very difficult for me to suddenly change them, off the cuff. I think that there actually already is, now that I pulled up the bill, there actually already is a provision that certain sections of the bill take effect immediately. That's Section 12. So the entire bill actually probably should be lumped into that line. That is a more technical change than probably you're contemplating. So at this point, I would just suggest a conceptual amendment to make the entire bill take effect immediately.
A brief at ease. All right, Senate Judiciary Committee, back on the record.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hughes.
We learned during the break that it looks like if an amendment passes, Section 12 may be deleted. So for now, I'd like to propose a conceptual amendment that in line 22, July 1, 2022, be deleted, and the words in place of that be the word in place of that be immediately. So line 22 would read insert immediately.
Is there any objection or comment from the committee? Hearing none, that motion passes. And so we have a conceptual amendment has passed.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hughes.
And you've already reiterated this twice, but because we do give Ledge Legal the ability to make this conform and work, I just want to stay on the record. So if that needs to be adjusted somehow so it works, I don't have a problem with that.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator Keel, do you care to maintain your objection?
Mr. Chairman, I remove my objection to Amendment 1 as conceptually amended.
All right. With that objection being removed, is there any further objection? Seeing none, Amendment 1 labeled A.13 is adopted. At this time, I will move amendment number 2 labeled A.8. Is there objection for discussion?
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Senator Hughes, thank you so much. Mr. King, would you please explain amendment number 2?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, again, for the record, Ed King, staff Senator Holland. Amendment number 2 is attempting to align SB 53 with the changes that the Senate Judiciary Committee made to Senate Joint Resolution 6. There was discussion in this committee about ensuring that the permanent fund dividend calculation was based on the full calculation, and if the legislature opted to appropriate an amount less than that, that the calculation for the dividend would not change. So to affect that change, on page 2, line 19 of the bill, the words not less than are inserted in relationship to the permit fund dividend calculation. And then on page 2, line 22, the words up to are inserted to indicate that the government's portion of the POMV, if you will, can be less than or that amount.
Thank you, Mr. King. I'm just going to also take a second here for some bookkeeping, some housekeeping. Senator Schauer, we just assume we have a quorum here. We can hold committee business here. But we just assume by Senator Schauer's silence that he is agreeing to the motions as they're adopted. Senator Schauer, could you just confirm verbally that Your audio is working?
Senator Holland, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Yes, sir. I suppose silence is consent. So far, no issues. Thank you for asking.
Just wanted to check with you on that. Senator Hughes.
And just so the public knows, I know we have had some remote meetings, but legislators, if they're participating remotely, can vote on amendments. So Senator Schauer would, you know, if something came to a vote, he would be able to.
Thank you, Senator Hughes, for that clarification. Is there any discussion on Amendment Number 2? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm not 100% clear on – I don't see much harm in this, but I'm not 100% clear on whether it's necessary. It seems to me we could always, if we had extra general fund dollars, put them in the dividend fund. Does this accomplish anything different than that, or is this more what you might call symbolic alignment?
Senator Keel, through the chair, as legal counsel had mentioned earlier, the legislature has the power of appropriation. And regardless of what the statute is currently says or says in the future, that power is not diminished.
But, and so the question is, this is symbolically, is aligning this with the constitutional changes proposed by the current special sessions topic, correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. My understanding of the committee's intent here is to align the law with what the legislature intends to do. And in that respect, if this bill is intended to mirror the constitutional amendment that's being debated, that is why this amendment is, it's not necessary, but symbolically necessary.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Senator Myers?
Well, I was just going to state that I believe that since the as future amendments will show where the intent is to tie this to the constitutional amendment, this is what the law would need to be further down the line in order to match it up with that constitutional amendment after it passes.
Thank you, Senator Myers. All right, is there any discussion for the committee? Senator Schauer.
Thank you. Just a quick comment on that. I think that one of the things that will also help with this across the board as you're attempting to do it is that, as all of us are painfully aware, because three of the five members of this committee actually went through this working group for the last month and a half, part of the challenge we are facing is the trust of the public and the legislature's ability to follow the law. So while I do agree this is symbolic, I believe it is important to align this so that moving forward we can show people that, one, we're going to follow the law, and two, I think there's an accountability issue here for future legislators to show them and governors that, hey, this is the law, we need to follow it. So while that's a small point, I think it is symbolically very important in restoring faith with the public, as at least the other two working group committee members are well aware of. I just want to put that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. Great point. As the newly found chair of Senate Judiciary, I'm always confounded that the state of Alaska, we have a hard time following our own laws. And I do believe it is important that we make these things line up and that we follow them. Senator Hughes.
Yeah, I just basically have a question because I'm looking at above that, because we're fixing the not less than and the up to. But I'm looking above that. It falls under Section B that starts on line 16, and we have there the legislature may appropriate instead of shall. So I maybe one of the amendments that we're going to consider today fixes that, or that may be something we'll need to consider Monday. Can you let me know if we're fixing that? Because now we're saying the legislature may appropriate, and
Mr.
concern, because that means they may not also.
Mr. Chairman, I direct that question to legal counsel. It's in reference to a recent court decision.
I'm sorry, say that again.
I would direct that question to Emily Nauman.
Ms. Nauman?
Just for the record, this is Emily with Legislative Legal Services. Senator Hughes is correct that we're retaining that language the legislature may appropriate because that's consistent with the decision in Willikowski v. State. It would not be appropriate to change that law to say the legislature shall appropriate unless the constitutional amendment had passed, and since it has not, I believe the law would be unconstitutional if it said shall appropriate. So that's why the may is retained there.
Thank you, Ms. Nauman. Senator Hughes.
Yes, and this question is for Emily. So could we have some kind of contingency language that would change that word from may to shall if the constitutional amendment passes?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I got to thumb through the paperwork here, but I believe the forthcoming amendment to tie this bill to the proposed constitutional amendment actually does give us the shall language, assuming that the constitutional amendment then passes. Yes, it is in a future amendment, and when we get to it, I'd be happy to point it out.
Thank you so much for that clarification, Senator Myers. All right. Is there any other discussion from the committee? Senator Hughes, are you going to maintain your objection?
I will remove my objection.
Is there further objection to this amendment? Seeing none, amendment number 2, labeled A.8, is adopted. Amendment number 3, labeled A.11, appears to be from Senator Myers. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move amendment 3.
I'll object for discussion. Senator Myers, would you care to explain the amendment?
Yes. So the point of this
amendment. Senator Hall, sorry, it's hard for me to track on this one. Can I get that amendment number again? Because I only have one from, I don't think I see one from Senator Myers.
Brief at ease. All right, Senator Judiciary is back on the record. Senator Schauer, the amendment package is on basis, and if you check your text messages, I think Senator Hughes has provided you a little bit of clarification on that. It is labeled as amendment number 3.
I was going with the email, but I see the amendment package. I'm going to pull it up now. I apologize for slowing you down. I didn't realize there was another one. Thanks. I'm on it.
It's amendment number 3, A.11 is the top right-hand numbers on it. Senator.
Thank you.
Senator Myers, care to continue?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So the point of this amendment is to tie the bill into the proposed constitutional amendment. And what we want to do is, initially this bill created an advisory vote to go before the people as to whether or not these changes were acceptable to them for the PFD statute. And instead, what we're doing, there's a separate amendment, I believe, to actually remove the advisory vote. What this amendment would do instead is it would tie the effectiveness of this bill to a vote on a proposed constitutional amendment, so that if the constitutional amendment passes, the bill would stay in effect, but if the constitutional amendment would fail at either before it got out of the legislature or at the ballot box November of next year, then it would then this bill would end up being repealed. And so because the concept here is to make the law align with what we are proposing to do, even though because it's a constitutional amendment, it can't become effective until after a vote next year. So we're creating a tie in there so that if the constitutional amendment fails, then the law goes back to the way that it has been. And one thing that does is, as Senator Hughes was mentioning on the last amendment, on page 2, line 14, it gives us the shall language instead of the may. And so it takes care of that. And as Ms. Nauman has mentioned, the shall language is only legal and constitutional if the constitutional amendment passes.
Thank you, Senator Myers. Senator Hughes?
I have a question for the maker of the amendment. So the repeal would be, if it failed in November of 2022, mm-hmm. so it would be effective for this year's PFD, and assuming the PFD would go out next October in 2022, it would be effective for those two PFD years, correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I actually have a question for Ms. Nauman. Ms. Nauman, we're putting an effective date in here on page 6, line 11. We end up with section 18. My question is, since these things do happen occasionally, quite famously this year, what would happen with this bill if the passage of the effective date failed?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, are you talking about the entire bill or just this amendment? If the amendment went in and the bill failed, or the bill on its own?
If we pass this amendment, the bill goes to the floor in either body, and the bill passes but the effective date fails, what would be the effect on the bill as a whole?
Ms. Dahman?
Through the chair, yes, I'm considering that. Just
oh, that's
a minute,
fine. Take
please.
Your time.
I think the answer is complicated. You know, all of these sections would take effect at the same time, and I have a feeling that the changes and the rewind changes would happen simultaneously, and there would be, in effect, no change to the statutes. But it would be chaos for potentially a small amount of time as our office figured out what to do if that was the case.
Thank you, Ms. Nauman. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two questions. No, let me not do that. Let me ask one question.
One question?
Mr. Chairman, to the maker of the amendment, in the conditional effect section, page 6, line 3 of the amendment, we go back to the original PFD language. If by November 30, 2023, the voters have not approved the constitutional amendment, they can only appear on general election ballots, if memory serves. Any particular reason you chose November 30 of 2023?
Senator Keel, I did not pick that date. I simply asked legal to say if the amendment failed next year, and so I'm not sure if there's a legal reason for that or if it was simply a drafting error.
I would bet it's probably to allow tabulation time for ballots and accurate counts. Oh, I'm sorry. Is there? Yes. Yeah, so should we throw that question out to Emily? Ms. Nauman, did you hear the question?
Yes. For the record, this is Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services. And although that was a generous cover on me, no, this is probably just a typo, and it should say 2022. I apologize for the error.
I didn't catch that myself, so.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Hughes.
I propose a conceptual amendment that on page 6, line 3, 2023 be changed to 2022.
So the conceptual amendment is proposed by Senator Hughes that says amendment number 3A.11, page 6, line number 3, strike 2023 and insert 2022. Mm-hmm. Is there any objection? Seeing none. That amendment is adopted. Is there any other discussion on this amendment number 3? I will withdraw my objection. Is there any further objection? Amendment number 3 is adopted. All right, on to amendment number 4, labeled A.6. I move amendment number 4, A.6. Is there objection for discussion?
Object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Mr. King, would you please provide an explanation for amendment number 4?
Mr. Chairman, the simple answer is that with the passage of the last amendment, this provision is now superfluous and is no longer necessary.
I'm sorry. I'm believe it or not, I'm having a hard time catching your between my hearing aids and your mask. Say that again.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the passage of the last amendment that puts this question to the vote of the people through the constitutional amendment nullifies the need for this advisory vote.
All right. Well, then I will withdraw Amendment Number 4.
But no.
I'm sorry. 3 for these. Back on the record. I apologize for that. I'm not going to withdraw this amendment. I still move Amendment Number 4, A.6. Thank you, Mr. King. Thank you, Senator Myers, for that clarification. Is there any further discussion on Amendment Number 4? Senator Hughes.
Can Mr. King explain, because it's a little confusing when we almost withdrew and we didn't. Can you just explain why this is needed, please?
Yes, Senator Hughes, through the chair. The amendment proposes to remove the advisory vote that is currently in Senate Bill 53. With the addition of the constitutional amendment conditional effect, the people are going to get an opportunity to vote. So therefore, having an advisory vote within Senate Bill 53 is no longer necessary. So this amendment removes the vote within the bill and leaves in place the requirement for the vote by the constitutional amendment.
Thank you for that clarification, and I will just say that sometimes senators, full disclosure here, sometimes we ask for clarifications for the sake of the public, but we really need clarification ourselves. So that was the case this time.
Senator Hughes, why did you look at me when you said that?
Mr. Chairman, I resemble Senator Hughes's remark.
Thank you, Senator Keel, for that sharing. All right. So is there any further discussion for Amendment Number 4? Seeing none, Senator Hughes, do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection, Mr. Chair.
Is there any further objection to Amendment Number 4, A.6? Seeing none.
Excuse me, I've just noticed and received a text that Senator Schauer has lost his link, so we might want to take an at-ease until he can get back with us.
Brief at-ease. Senator Judiciary is back on the record. Senator Schauer, can you hear me?
Loud and clear, sir. How about now? Can you hear me now?
That's good. Yeah, that we don't have the echo now.
I have the phone up just in case, as a backup.
All right. So I believe the last words were the objection to Amendment Number 4 was withdrawn. No further objection. And with that, Amendment Number 4 was adopted. I have Amendment Number 5 before me. And at this time, I am not going to move Amendment Number 5. We may revisit this on Monday. All right. So moving on to Amendment Number 6. Let me find it real quick. Excuse me. I've got it in here somewhere. Oh, yeah, there it is. Back of the right stack. All right, so amendment number six, I will move amendment number six.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Mr. King, we're discussing amendment number six, labeled A.14. Could you please provide an explanation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Ed King. Mr. Chairman, amendment number six is an attempt to, utilize the idea here, Mr. Chairman, is that the 5% of market value cap on the use of the earnings reserve, there has been hesitation or resistance to using more than that amount because the law is in place. The amendment before you would authorize the legislature to use an additional amount of the money that's in the earnings reserve to assist the state in transitioning to a long-term fiscal, stable fiscal plan. The amendment number six authorizes the use of an additional 1.5% of the market value for the next 2 years, fiscal year 22 and fiscal year 23, in order to bridge the gap while the long-term fiscal plan that the working group came up with can be effectuated. This is a use of about $2 billion of the $15 billion surplus that was earned last year. That is in effect what we're talking about, Mr. Chairman.
So the original governor's plan had a $3 billion transition, a bridge fund that was going to be moved from the permanent fund into the CBR. And this is just a different funding mechanism for the expected shortfall for the next 2 years.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. With the if the legislature were to pass the permanent fund dividend calculation as proposed by this bill with the 50% of market value, that would require $1.5 billion. That money has already been spent based on the appropriations bill that passed during the last session. And so there's only roughly $500 million of funding available to fund whatever additional appropriations the legislature wants to make during this special session, leaving a shortfall of roughly $1 billion.
Thank you, Mr. King. Senator Hughes.
So if we were not to pass this amendment and we pass this law, we'd find ourselves not able to follow the law. Is that correct?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, That is correct, although in the immediate term, there is actually enough money in the CBR that if the legislature wanted to balance this budget, they could use it through a CBR draw. But that would take the CBR balance down to a very low level that's not viewed as sustainable. And so this, rather than transferring money from the earnings reserve to the CBR as the governor has proposed, this allows an alternative to take the money directly from the earnings reserve and utilize it for the appropriations that are currently being debated.
Mr. Chair, is Alexi Painter online? I think he was earlier.
Alexi Painter, are you listening in? I believe Senator Hughes may have a question for you.
For the record, this is Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance. I'm not sure if there was a question directed to me. I've lost audio.
Senator Hughes, do you have a question for Alexi?
Yes, I can repeat it. So, Alexi, we're looking at Amendment 6, which would allow for this
Alexi,
year.
Alexi, this is Emily with Legal Services. I can hear you, but I also can't hear the committee, if you can hear me.
We can hear you. So Ms. Nauman, we hear you. Are you hearing me right now? Apparently not. Mr. Painter, can you hear us? Another IT problem. I'm afraid once we go to a brief at ease, we would be able to hear them anyway. Give IT a chance to resolve it.
Just so you know, Senator Hall, I can hear loud and clear.
Kind of heard
that's
that.
Like, with the rest of them.
Well, we'll step to brief at ease. Brief at ease.
for.
Do we have audio?
It has to be gaveled.
No.
Hey, this is Tim in the LAO, confirming I got audio from you guys now. Thank you.
Okay, all right. All right, so we're ready to gavel back in?
One sec.
Senate Judiciary Committee, back on the record. Thank to everyone who may or may not be able to view this thing for your patience. We're working through some IT problems and a few other things. But thank you, Alexi Painter, for joining us here in person. I will ask Senator Hughes to maybe restate the question and then put yourself on the record provide the answer.
So thank you, Mr. Painter, for physically walking over here to respond. So if Amendment 6, which would allow an additional, would allow a 1.6% POMV draw in addition to the annual 5% POMV draw, if this amendment were not to pass, my question was, is there a way for us to follow the law if we were to pass this, which would be a 50-50 POMV, I'm estimating $2,300, would there be the funds to pay for this and in the CBR, and what would the remaining balance be? So how much would we have to draw, and where could we get it, and what would that leave for the CBR in order to follow the law if this were to pass but not this amendment? I mean, in other words, the bill would pass without the amendment, and we couldn't do the additional 1.5%.
For the record, Alexi Painter, Director of the Legislative Finance Division. So in the current year's budget, we have right now about a $500 million surplus, a little larger, before payment of a dividend or any other UGF items. And so the dividend would cost about $1.5 billion, bringing us to about $1 billion deficit. And the CBR balance is projected to be a bit less than that, assuming a reverse sweep. So there would not be adequate funds in that account to pay for the budget. We would have to turn to other accounts, such as PCE or the higher ed fund, or some other account to try to bridge that deficit, because there would not be sufficient funds in the CBR alone to do that.
Follow up?
Senator Hughes?
So essentially, we would wipe out the CBR down to zero and still have to pull out of other accounts if we don't pass this amendment?
Through the
if
chair.
We want to follow the 50-50.
Through the chair, yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any further?
Senator Holland, question.
Senator Hughes? Pardon me, Senator Schauer?
I please don't offend Senator Hughes in that manner. She definitely am the bad side of that one. So for Alexi, if this was to pass as opposed to a bridge fund, And I'm asking a little bit of an opinion here, so I hope you'll bear with me on this one. If we did this, we could draw up to 1.5% more, but we wouldn't necessarily have to do that. In other words, this might provide a little more flexibility than just doing a direct transfer, because we may not need all of that. And what you're saying here, you know, depending on how you were to move the funds around, we would not have to draw that entire 1.5%, if I've got the math right, to do this. So is that in fact the case, that this would be potentially a little bit more flexible, not have to draw as much out of the fund with an extra 1.5% to accomplish what the bridge fund is intended to do? And I ask it also for the committee in the political sense of, would this be more palatable, because we wouldn't be just moving money without knowing if we needed it. We would only have to use what we needed to bridge until other things fell in place. Is that enough of a question, Alexa? Does that make sense?
Chair, Senator Sauer, yes. So the language in the amendment says may appropriate up to, so the legislature could choose to appropriate less than the full 1.5% extra. So depending on revenue performance over the next year, in fiscal year 23, obviously the deficit is unknown at this point, and so that would provide flexibility for the legislature to pick from the number that's needed.
Thank you, Mr. Painter. Senator Sauer, do you have anything else?
Just one follow-up. Alexi, and I'm asking off the cuff, clearly not going to hold you to it, roughly what would the percentage draw be needed if it was to pass this year and we were to use these numbers? Do you know roughly what that percentage would it be, like, you know, 0.75%, 1%? Do you have any idea what that would, since we kind of have some idea of the numbers right now, what it would pencil out as? Thank you, and I'm done after that.
Through the chair, Senator Sauer, it depends on the budget for FY22 is not quite, I think, finished yet. Obviously, in the other body, there's desire to pay for oil and gas tax credits as they put in another item, and potentially for some vetoed item. The governor, for example, had $7.5 million of UGF in amendments that he released yesterday for the FY22 budget. So there is some uncertainty in the final FY22 budget number, despite the fact that we've passed the main appropriations bills at this point. So while right now we would be looking at a $1 billion deficit, this draw, the additional 1.5%, would bring in about $900 million. If the legislature wanted to keep a target of a higher balance in the CBR, you may want to take that full 1.5%. On the other hand, if the legislature is okay with going down to a 50% or a $500 million in the balance in the CBR, you may need only 1% or 0.75%. But then again, those other items, the veto restorations, the oil tax credits and school debt reimbursement and other items that were unfunded at the end of the regular session because of the CBR vote failure, if those are added, then there would be less funds to work with. So I don't know that I can give you one single number, because it really depends on where the budget ends up for this year, which does not seem to be quite settled at this point.
Thank you, Mr.
It was crystal clear. Thank you, Senator Holland, for the follow-up.
Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Alexi, could you just speak to whether or not adjusting it, if we adjust some revenue measures to bring in additional revenue, if we were to make those include retroactive dates to July 1 of 2021, is there any way that that would help as far as solving this? In other words, give us the kind of the backup money that the CBR provides. If we were, for instance, if we were to take some out of the CBR, but we had a little more revenue rather than waiting for an effective date, say FY22 July 1, do it FY21 July 1.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, it depends on which revenue measures. Obviously, if we're setting up a new tax, regardless of the effective date, we would have to put that infrastructure in place. Or similarly, if you're increasing an excise tax like the motor fuel tax, you can't really do that retroactively because people have already paid for that fuel. On the other hand, revenue measures like the governor's proposed S corporation tax for the corporate income tax, that could be applied retroactively because the companies have not yet filed their corporate income taxes, and that would provide revenue in the current fiscal year. Or similarly, changing oil and gas taxes could be accomplished in the current fiscal year with a effective date of January 1st or some other date. So it is possible, depending on the revenue measure selected, to get some immediate revenue, but only for some of them.
Follow up from Senator Hughes.
And this is asking you to, and it can be rough again, I won't hold it to you, but based on some of the revenue ideas that Commissioner Mahoney presented and your statements just now that certain revenue measures could include retroactive dates, what kind of amount could we bring up? For instance, I would estimate the gaming proposal the governor has would be very complicated to set up, so that one you couldn't do. But of the ones that have been presented, can you give us a rough number? I mean, are we talking several hundred million could be brought in or to help out if we may use retroactive dates on these?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, so the two that spring to mind that could be retroactive would be the S corporation tax, which I think the number that the Department of Revenue presented was somewhere in the $60 to $70 million range in the first year. And then the other would be the per barrel tax credit, was the other one that DOR presented with immediate revenue. And that's going to depend on oil prices. I think they had a first year estimate in excess of $100 million. But again, I'm going by memory, so I may be off. So if you add those two together, you know, you're in the $100 to $200 million range. Depending on oil prices, the impact of the per barrel credit could be greater or less.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Painter. Thanks, Senator Hughes. A brief at ease. Senator Giussari back on the record. Brian Fechter?
Fechter, yes, sir.
Director Fechter. Did you have any input on the last comments from Mr. Painter, the last question from Senator Hughes?
Would you mind repeating the question, please?
Okay. Basically, we were exploring the idea to help have sufficient funds in order to pay a 50-50 PFD if we were to pass SB 53 so we could actually follow what the law that we passed. And we were exploring what's available in the CBR, et cetera. So I had a question regarding using retroactive dates for any new revenue measures that are passed, what kind of funds that might be able to bring in to help us so that we could pay the 2350 PFD. And actually, I'm going to make a, if it's okay, before you answer that question, Brian, I just kind of want to say why this is important, because the public is pretty frustrated with the legislature, understandably, because haven't solved this, and it's been about 6 years, and they'd like it solved. They're very eager to settle the PFD, no matter where they are on the political spectrum, even no matter what they think about the PFD. They want it settled, and they want the state's budget fiscal gap solved, and some a sustainable long-term something fiscally responsible going forward. So if this legislature manages to put through a package that is solving our fiscal gap and we're settling the PFD, I'm incredibly concerned that if we don't follow this law right off the bat and don't pay a 50-50 PFD, the public it's going to be very confusing. And then when the constitutional amendment goes to the ballot box in November, I fear we risk a chance of it being derailed and being right back in the mess we're in right now. So I think we should all consider that, because I know a lot of folks hesitate taking a penny out more than the 5%. But there's a trade-off, and then it can be settled, and we can protect the ERA, the entire fund, long term. So we're not talking about taking additional money out for you know, year after year after year after year. It would be just the very short term, and then it would be hands off. You can't touch it. That's it. So, but if we're really going to settle it, we always have to bear in mind the public and what will happen at the ballot box. And if I know there's been discussion of a stair-step approach, and mathematically that would work, But I'm of the opinion politically and based on the public's concern about what's going on, it'd be very confusing, and it might actually derail our whole effort to settle this for the long term. So that is one of the reasons why I had wanted questions answered from Alexei and from you, Mr. Fechter, so that we can find a path forward where we could pay that 50-50 PFD this year. So I know I just made commentary after my question. Do you remember my question, Mr. Fechter, as far as retroactive dates with revenue and how that might help?
Yes, through the chair, I would echo Alexei Painter's, Director Painter's comment that the two bills that we did have revenue coming in fiscal 22 were the changes to our corporate income tax structure as well as the per barrel credit piece, but also to the extent that you can look towards a existing tax and simply manipulate the rate. For instance, our alcohol taxes, our tobacco taxes, things that are already in place, it would not be a big lift or take a large amount of time to change those rates and get that all implemented so revenue could come in.
Director Fechter, if you would, for your last comment, please put yourself on the record officially. Thank you.
For the record, Brian Fechter, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue.
Thank you so much. Senator Hughes, any further questions?
Yeah, and I guess just as follow-up, it's the same thing I did for Alexei, and we won't hold you to an exact number, but roughly mentioning the things that you did, what's your estimate as far as how much we could bring in if we use some retroactive dates on some of these things?
The figure is $116 million through the chair, Senator Hughes, for the per barrel credit limitation to $5 per barrel from the current level. And then for the corporate income tax change, I'm showing about $60 million might come in fiscal 22.
Okay, thank you. And I'll just make a follow-up comment, Mr. Chair. And I want to be extremely, extremely clear. These revenues are to pay for government. These revenue to any taxes that happen or don't happen have to do with paying for government. The permanent fund, the PFD program, was set up, as the people receiving dividend from the permanent fund. And we've got different things going on with funds this year because of how it was set up. But the principle is that if we're looking at needing extra revenues, it is to close the budget gap for state government. So I just want to make it clear, and it may to some be a matter of semantics, but for me it's a matter of principle. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. I agree. It's a shame that the permanent fund dividend always seems to be the last expense we discuss every year, but many believe it should be the first dollars that are spent in the budget. Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that, and I want to be extremely, extremely clear. The permanent fund dividend is a program of the state government. It is not a constitutional obligation, although I think it would be wise for us to protect it in the Constitution in the future. It has never been, was not set up that way, and so I appreciate the differing views that we have, but it is unquestionably, and by Supreme Court decisions, part of our budget and part of our budget deficit issue. With that, a question for either Mr. Painter or the Deputy Commissioner, Mr. Fechter. I think there's also a bill dealing with oil and gas property taxes, and I wondered whether the question of when that takes effect could potentially, if we were to look at that one, bring revenue into the current fiscal year, and if so, roughly how much? I think that's an increase in the total state oil and gas property tax from 20 mils to 30 mils with no change in what municipalities can keep, if memory serves.
I see Director Fechter's unmuted. To run with him, Director Fechter?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, in rough terms, the number I'm showing for a 10 mil increase to the current petroleum property tax is just shy of around $300 million. And I would have to get back to the committee as to how feasible that would be to assign a retroactive date to it.
Mr. Painter, did you have any input?
Through the chair, again, for the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance. The one comment I would make is that those payments are typically made towards the end of the fiscal year, so, but I believe they're based on a calendar year valuation, so I'm not quite sure how that would work either, but just for some further context, those payments are typically one of the last sources of revenue the state gets in a fiscal year in June.
Thank you, Mr. Painter. Follow-up from Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, on another topic related to the amendment.
Please go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Holland, may I ask a relevant to that before Senator Keel, if it's a different topic? I just wanted to follow up on the property tax.
Senator Schauer, please.
Thank you. Sorry, Senator Keel. I just want, before we went to a different trail, for either of the presenters there, can they just validate that this is, so I'm not off topic, this is somewhat relevant to what was Senate Bill 57 2 years ago as far as the property taxes, and we had quite a bit of discussion, as I'm sure Senator Hughes and Keel remember, over the oil property taxes. And the reason I'm asking this question, because it wasn't just discussed here now, if I have that correct, and that is in fact what we're discussing, this would be separate from changing the oil tax structure that the companies pay, because we're talking about what the North Slope and, for example, Valdez would get from the property taxes. Is that correct? And we had that discussion, Alexi, you may remember, about what the governor may or may not be able to do for that amount. If I'm off topic, please correct me, but I thought it was important to mention, because there is discussion about how much, you know, pressure we're putting on the oil industry, but this was what the municipalities or the boroughs were collecting. I just want to make sure that's clear for the record. Thank you.
Mr. Painter?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, I believe Senator Keel was asking about an increase to the total mill rate of the petroleum property tax. The Senate bill from 2 years ago that the governor proposed did not change the tax rate, but eliminated the deductibility of the state of municipal taxes against the state tax. So it was a very different structure than what I think Senator Keel is referring to.
Thank you, Senator Holland. I just want to make sure it was clear, because we're talking a number of issues here on the tax side, and that was one of them that was important. I just wanted to make sure we had it clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. Senator Keel, did you have another question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. So the question goes to something Senator Hughes alluded to in terms of how we bridge to a more thorough fiscal plan, and one of the recommendations out of the working group, as Mr. Painter will recall, was that we ensure that any bridge be one time, be limited, so that Alaskans could depend on the results coming out of it. As I look at Amendment 6, it authorizes 2 years of what I would call an overdraw, and I know not everyone looks at it that way, but a deviation from the 5% limit. And I guess the question would be, Senator Hughes has concerns about a constitutional amendment on the permanent fund constitutionalizing that POMB failing. If that were the case, and I don't know if the question is for the maker of the amendment or for Mr. Painter here, the technical expert, what protections would we have preventing further draws from the permanent fund beyond 5%?
Through the chair, Senator Keel. So in the absence of a constitutional amendment, the legislature could access the ERA at any time, either through appropriation or by changing the statute. So there would not be anything stopping the legislature from additional draws, either in this case following a statute or just drawing in excess of the POMV through the budget.
In the absence of the statute?
In the absence of a constitutional amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that is a grave concern of mine with the approach in Amendment 6, authorizing a start on and on drawing more than 5%. And I understand the hope in this amendment that it would only happen twice. But I am concerned that that it's a little like trying to limit yourself. I don't know about other members of the committee, but the serving size of potato chips is one bag. Whether that's the little one from the vending machine or the one at the grocery store, when it's salty and crunchy, the serving size is one bag in my world. And so I'm not sure I can eat just one, or in this case, two. And I'm not sure the history of the legislature indicates that we're going to be able to constrain ourselves that way. The benefit of the 5% limit that this amendment would carve out an exemption to is that we don't need the crystal ball or the dream telling us when the seven fat years come and when the seven lean years come. We just restrain ourselves. Joseph did great, but God gave him the dream from Pharaoh to tell him when to start saving and when he could spend. We don't get that, so that gives me a lot of pause.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Teal. I'll just speak real quick. I do appreciate this 1.5 over 2 years. I think that's a great limit to it. I just was recently looking back at the history of the permanent fund dividend. You said government tends not to be able to limit itself. My concern is the government consistently limits itself in payment to the permanent fund dividend. The first permanent fund dividend of $1,000 was approximately 14.4% of the market value of the fund at that time. And I don't know what Governor Sheffield was thinking when he authorized that payment way back then. Sure, it was three times maybe the annual PFD or whatever. But I just hear everyone wringing hands, gnashing teeth over the dangers that we're doing to the permanent fund. The permanent fund continues to grow. Over the next 20 years after that first payment in 1983, the permanent fund dividend bounced around 4% of the market value of the fund. Over the next 10 years, the permanent fund bounced around 3% of the market value of the fund. Over the next 10 years, the permanent fund bounced around 2% of the market value. Now we ask Alaskans to be happy with about 1% of the market value of the permanent fund. I believe that's going to be what $1,000 would be, maybe a little less or so. And I just don't believe that's fair. I think that it is a problem that the state of Alaska consistently controls itself and makes ever diminishing payments of the permanent fund dividend as a permanent fund has just grown at unexpected levels. And so I'll jump off that soapbox. Senator Hughes, did you have anything?
Yeah, and I actually want to say I really appreciate the concern that Senator Keel brought up. Without a constitutional amendment, it's all very vulnerable now. The only thing that might protect it is who's currently in the 60 seats at any one given time, unless we protect it. So constitutionally, we should protect it, and that is actually one reason I think I made the case why I believe we would confuse the public and risk the chance that they wouldn't choose to permanently protect it if we didn't follow the law and go with that 50-50 now. But I also believe there might be some out-of-box way to protect exactly what you're talking about. So if we did the 1.5% for 2 years and the constitutional amendment failed, what could we – and I'm just thinking off the top of my head, which is probably not a very good idea to do on the record, but you could have something.
Why stop now?
No, but you could have something where that money had to be paid back to the permanent fund or something like that. I mean, we could think about some way, some kind of stopgap that if we were to do this and the constitutional amendment didn't take place, what we could do. But I also want to make the point that endowment funds, and I am by no means an expert, and there's a variety of ways that they're handled. But some endowment funds around the world work off their current balance rather than a year lag and an average of the prior 5 years. And so when they do 5%, they might be doing it on the current balance. They might also have a range, maybe of 4% to 7%. So the fact that we're doing 5% and we have this lag, the actual effective rate of the $3.069 billion that is equivalent to the 5% percent of market value according
this
to our
draw.
Lag. This year's drag, according to our draw, according to the statute, is an effective rate is 3.7 of the current balance. So because we had a good year, and it doesn't mean we should blow it, but if we can use a bridge funding to get the win back the trust of the people, and then pass a constitutional amendment that would disallow additional draws in the future. I think it would be a win-win for everyone. So let's think maybe over the next few days if there's some way, something we can do in the event that the constitutional amendment doesn't pass, what we could do with the fact that we took out one, if this were to pass and it made it through the body and we had the option to take out 1.5, which also, just hearing about the revenues and when things would kick in, it could be that in the second year you wouldn't need the full 1.5%, and then that's possible as well, and that could be a goal. So I just want to validate Jesse's concern, because it is it could happen, and you want some protection, but I don't want to just throw out the idea because of that concern. I think we can work through it.
Thanks, Senator Hughes. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I want to echo something that Senator Hughes mentioned near the beginning of this meeting, that what we're doing in this bill, both with the bill itself and the amendments that we've been proposing, are in large part symbolic in the absence of the constitutional amendment. As both Mr. Painter and Ms. Nauman have stated, we can pay a dividend of effectively any size, from $0 all the way up to whatever we can find in the piggy bank, and we can draw off of the ERA for state services from $0 up until the $21 billion that's currently in the ERA that's unencumbered. And so what we're doing here, again, with Amendment 6, just like in a number of the other provisions of this bill, is, again, largely symbolic up until this, up until a constitutional amendment gets passed. And so we can do everything that we're talking about doing with this bill. We can actually do without this bill. But a large part of the point of what we're doing today is to say, we've spent 6 years in this state ignoring the PFD law. We don't want to ignore another law in going through our transitions here. And so the point of this amendment, kind of like the whole point of the bill here, is to simply state, okay, we're gonna follow our own laws here. And that is, I believe Senator Hughes referenced, that's not the only frustration, but certainly part of the frustration that has been out in the public, is that we can't follow our own laws. And so I believe this is a good idea, because we're going to tell the public, we're going to try to restore some of the trust that we've lost over the last few years, and we're going to try to follow our own laws here.
Thank you, Senator Myers. Is there any other discussion from the committee? Senator Hughes?
Yeah, sorry. As one of the eight working on the fiscal plan working group, along with Senator Keel and Senator Schauer, we were doing a lot of homework and assignments and discussions during those 4 to 6 weeks. And one of the things we did was to put together models of how to close the gap, and folks were doing modeling based on 50-50, and there were members across the political spectrum, and Senator Keel can correct me if I'm wrong, some were okay with a $3 billion bridge funding, some were okay with $1.5 billion. So that 1.5, I think, was the midpoint. Maybe Alexi remembers that too, because he was working with us. But I believe $1.5 billion was the midpoint of what the group agreed on. And one of the principles while we were working, and it's in the report, is that we always wanted to bear in mind what would pass on the floor of the House and Senate as far as the policy vote, 11 or 21, and what would pass as a constitutional amendment, 14 and 27. So when we had that $1.5 billion bridge funding as a midpoint, it would indicate that, you know, there was a real possibility that we might be able to get the votes for something like that. So now, you never know. You never know until something goes to the floor. But I just want to make that point that this is a lesser amount than what the governor was proposing, and it would be therefore, that midpoint. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Any other comments from the committee? Seeing
Senator Hall.
Oh, Senator Schauer.
It's not a question. I'll make it brief. I simply want to back up what Senator Keel and Hughes have said from the working group, because we haven't had a great chance to get this in front of the public. His concerns are valid. It's something that we went through at length inside our that working group and countless hours of meetings and conversations. Anybody that does not have concerns about this legislature's ability to follow the statutes or spend more would be blind. So I think it was something that we worked through at length of different concerns of all of us of spending. And it's important to note, and this is kind of my base point and I'll be done, is that Senator Keel had to step off of his positions on things that he's not comfortable with, didn't like. Senator Schauer, myself, and Hughes and others had to step off positions that we're not comfortable with and didn't like. And as Senator Hughes pointed out, while there was not 100% unanimous agreement on everything, we generically kind of stepped to the middle so that we could find something that we could get the votes to pass to be done with this. So I just think it's important for the record to note the concerns are valid. I think we all pretty much had them. And none of us were 100% comfortable with everything happening. This is an effort by all of us to find a path that will work. And so what I like about this one compared to just transferring money, like Senator Keel said, and just taking it out, is this gives us some flexibility. Perhaps that's a better path. But this is a compromise for all of us. And I just think that's important, again, from that group to get it on the record so the public hears that. And thanks for the allowing me to say that, Senator Homer.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. Any other comment from the committee? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a list of riposts and rejoinders, and I'll put them aside because Senator Schauer reminded me of some of our long, long discussions in the working group. On Amendment 6, this one doesn't get me to the level of security that I was talking about for if we need in the working group's report for if we need a bridge. And as I recall, it was if we were not unanimous on whether we'd need a bridge. And so I'm gonna object, Mr. Chairman, to Amendment Number 6 and be happy to discuss it at interminable length with all of the members later or Monday or whenever we come back to it. But for now, that's what I'll say.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Keel.
Can I take it at ease for a second?
Brief at ease. Senate Judiciary Committee back on the record. I'm going to table Amendment Number 6 at this time for future work. And I do believe we've run out. Oh, that was Amendment Number 6, 8.14. And I do believe at this time we have exhausted our amendments for today. A few more housekeeping notes. We had set a 5 p.m. deadline on Sunday for amendments, and we have, just as a courtesy to Ledge Legal, we're going to push that back to 5 p.m. on Monday. We will still have Monday's 10:30 meeting. We have a invited speaker at 10:30, and then probably on Monday's meeting we'll have figured out when the next Senate Judiciary beyond that will be, the next Senate Judiciary Committee. Is there anything else before the committee at this time? Seeing none, thanks to Senator Schauer for joining in telephonically. Thanks to the committee for being here today. And we will be adjourned at 3:01 p.m. on today.